The British Broadcasting Corporation presents London Forum, the weekly program in which we bring prominent personalities to the microphone to discuss important topics of the day. And here is Graham Hutton to introduce the program.
This is Graham Hutton introducing this week's London Forum. Our question this week is rearmament to be our only defence? And we have with us three very distinguished Britishers, Lord Winster, representative of the Labour Party in the House of Lords and until recently the Governor of Cyprus, Viscount Hinchingbroke, Conservative MP for South Dorset since 1941, who has recently been all round the world, and Lord Boyd Orr, a Scottish farmer, formerly Director General of the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, now Chairman of the Movement for World Government, and one who has perhaps travelled most on both sides of the Iron Curtain. Well, now, our subject is rearmament to be our only defence, is very much in our minds in England, especially because of the special sitting of Parliament in the last few days, and I think perhaps we might begin by discussing the home front, so to say, the home situation, the situation in which rearmament has raised its ugly head. I wonder which of you three gentlemen would like to say something on that first of all.
Well, these few days we've been discussing the defence in Parliament and the contribution which this country of ours can make to defeat aggression. The debate, I think, has resolved itself into two great branches. Whether the military defence against aggression should be the principal defence, or whether we should also encourage social and economic advance throughout Western Europe and throughout the countries of the world to the same degree, if not a greater degree. And no doubt that is what we shall get down to discussing here today.
Question of resources, in other words. Well, Boyd Orr, what would you say to that?
Well, I think we're all agreed that we must have sufficient forces to prevent aggression on the part of any country in the world against any other country. That is the only hope for a world of peace.
Yeah.
But I hope that we will not depend entirely upon guns to create a new and better world.
Winster?
I just agree with both the former speakers. I think that what has been at the back of the minds of those who have taken part in these debates is that while we most certainly must strengthen our defences, yet rearmament by itself is not enough. And that we must have very much at heart not only the maintenance of our own economy here at home, but the assistance of the economy of other countries whose security we hope to make certain of by the rearmament program upon which we are embarking. But the economies of countries must be considered equally with the necessity for strengthening our defences.
Well, that question, of course, has been emphasised for all of us by recent developments. I'm not only thinking of Korea at the other side of the world. What has been emphasised is the long frontier, so to say, between the two halves of the world, the possibility of danger at all points along that frontier. And certainly in this country, which depends so much upon imports and exports, certainly also in this country which has done so much for development overseas, those particular thoughts would be most in our minds. I wonder if I might discuss that a little more. Hinchingbroke, have you got anything to say?
Of course, this country is making an immense effort already. We've got our own problems in Malay. We've been fighting communism for quite a considerable time there, as have the French in Indochina. We are a fully employed country, and it's very difficult to see where we can find the resources from within ourselves to provide a further effort, a military effort and an economic effort. I'm certain we can do it, but the problem is just how.
Well,
Boyd Orr,
I'm not prepared to discuss what percentage of our resources should go to defence against aggression and what percentage should go to development for the undeveloped countries to eliminate their hunger and poverty and so on. But I think that some part of it should be devoted to the economic and social improvement, not only of parts of our Commonwealth and Empire, but also parts of the whole world. And the point I'd like to emphasise is this, that while we are doing it and doing a very great deal, and the world doesn't know how much we are doing, while America is doing a great deal, that it needs to be a united effort of all the nations on a world plan to do it.
Winston?
Yes, but the essential thing is to remember that while we must undertake this program of rearmament, we must endeavor to keep our economy up to the highest possible level. And to reduce our standard, there will have to be sacrifices. The Prime Minister has told us so. But we must endeavor by all means in our power to keep our economy up to the highest possible level. And in fact, to go further than that, and to endeavor, even whilst carrying through this rearmament program, so to increase our production, so to improve our economy, that we can give assistance to other countries to maintain and improve their economies also.
Well, I'd like to come back to Boyd Orr's point on that. You see, I think that's almost enough, as it were, on the British home situation, but it's quite obvious already that all of us have got away from that and that the real problem is a problem of defending the whole of our so-called Western half world. Two forms of defence. One, the immediate one, perhaps, of armaments defence, you might call it, rearmament programmes, or whatever you like to call it in those terms. But the other one, which both Hinchingbroke and Boyd Orr introduced, is this one of what you might call the other defence, the defence of raising standards of living and defeating, shall we say, communism. You can call it communism, but as I gather what you were saying already, the problem is not one of communism, so much of aggression. Isn't that right, Boyd Orr?
Yes, well, I think any country should be allowed to be communist or capitalist or whatever it likes, to develop according to its past traditions and history and its environment. But what we must do is to ensure that no country will try to impose by force its ideology on any other country.
I think the essential point to bear in mind is this, that while it is not possible to resist or defeat communist aggression without arms, it is not possible to resist it or defeat it by arms alone.
Excellent. That's what I was trying to say, perhaps much worse.
Of course, it makes the problem much easier if one can divide communism from aggression and agree that either through a United Nations organization or separate world powers, we place ourselves in the proper state of preparedness in order to fight aggression wherever it shall appear. But I think the world, and perhaps the Western world, is in danger at the moment of assimilating communism and aggression. Trying to fight communism as an ideology and as a way of life with weapons of war. And I don't see any prospect that communism as such will ever be driven back by those means. We've got to develop a social and economic program as well.
Boyd Orr?
I'm entirely in agreement with Lord Hinchingbroke. You see, we confuse communism and Russian aggression. In my opinion, Russia is not a communist country. Russia is a bureaucracy. What you find throughout the world today, that more than half of the world's population, you see, are living in poverty and misery and hunger and so on, and there is a revolution, a revolt amongst these people against that. Now, the communists come along, you see, and make great promises to apply science, to give land to the people, to apply science to develop the resources, to eliminate disease, to eliminate illiteracy and so on. And therefore, communism is cashing in on this revolt.
Yes, but you guys, the fascinating fact, and it is a source of tremendous salvation to the West as I see it, that though Russia may pose the problem and create a demand by intriguing against the established order and saying that they can satisfy the means towards a greater standard of living, they in fact can't do it because they are, as one understands, a country which is living on a very low state of civilization. To some extent still very barbaric, and they haven't got the means of satisfying the demands they're creating. These countries have simply obliged to look to the Western world, which is in a high state of civilization with many factories and goods flowing from it, in order to meet the situation.
Winston.
I'm not sure, Boyd Orr. I think you said that the communists make promises. And that, I think, is the root of the matter. They do make promises, but I'm not quite sure which of these promises have been fulfilled. Now, if you take our own country, we believe and have repeatedly proclaimed that we believe that nations should be free to develop along their own lines and to rule their own destiny. We have not merely said that. We have implemented that. We have recently set India, Burma, and Ceylon free to develop their own way of life. And more than that, we've not let the matter rest there. Englishmen at the present moment have remained in those countries and are assisting those countries to develop their own resources and to develop their own way of life and their own economies.
I quite agree that our record, you see, has been very good. I mean, it's the greatest commonwealth and empire that the world has ever seen for that. But the point I want to make is this, you see, that you have this revolt against hunger, unnecessary hunger, poverty and misery. The communists come along and say, it is these we wish to abolish. And they can have an initial success by taking the wealth from the wealthy, taking the land from the big landowners, you see, and distributing these. Mm-hmm. But the people there do not know to what extent Russia can deliver the goods or to what extent we can deliver the goods.
In other words, your point, Boydor, is, I take it, just to clarify the whole discussion at this issue, that whereas the Russians can make promises, and Winster's point was they may not keep them, at any rate people believe they might keep them, whereas we don't either make promises. In other words, we ought to be prepared to do more as a social and economic defense.
Yes. The weakness of our side, you see, is that we say we are out to destroy communism, you see, without defining what communism is.
Well, do we need to define it if we're prepared to offer people more and better things?
If we are prepared to say, here is the enormous industrial power of the highly industrialized countries. Here is what modern technology can do. Our policy is to cooperate with all countries in the world who are willing to apply modern science for the mutual benefit of all countries to eliminate hunger, to eliminate disease, to have a higher standard of living, to develop the enormous potential wealth of the world for the benefit of the people of all countries. We should say that and say it with such a loud voice that here is a gospel for the future, which overcalls the gospel of the Russians. We give all these things to plus complete freedom to any country and prepare to defend the freedom of every country.
I quite agree that there's still a lot, an enormous amount to be done by propaganda and information, factual information, and that we must go on saying what we are prepared to do. But I'd also like to make the point that we've done a very great deal. This country of ours has sent overseas to Asia, to the Middle East, as much as it has received in martial aid from the United States in the last 5 years. And that fact alone is of enormous significance, and we must, without knowing it, have prevented the growth of communism already in many countries, which, but for that fact, would already now be communist.
And, of course, the
point... It's a great British effort, and it's not sufficiently appreciated.
I agree with you. I mean, the world doesn't know how much we have done. Now, the world doesn't know how much we can do when we have greater things to offer the world than merely industrial products. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have able to offer the world, you see.
Administrative skills, you mean?
Administrative skills, people
skill.
Of all religions, all colors. The greatest skill in finance and international trade, you see, which the Americans do not yet have, and the Russians don't begin to realize, you see. We have these great assets to give to the world, plus what we have done. But my complaint is we do not proclaim this to the world, and we do not make the offer to cooperate with all nations in a clear enough voice, you see, that what we stand for is our free world for free freedom for every nation, plus the application of modern technology for the developed and undeveloped resources of the world for the benefit of all nations.
I wonder if it would be useful at this point discussing, you might, for instance, take this point up, Winster, here, whether we could do this. I mean, obviously, we can't do it by ourselves. What is implied here for us if we've got both to rearm and do the social and economic improvements? What is involved for our Western half-world on the organizational side? I mean, obviously, we can't do it alone.
That was in my mind when I heard Boydor's last remark. I entirely, of course, agree with what he says about what we should try to do to improve conditions in these other poverty-stricken and unfortunate countries. But we must be very careful not to fall into the same trap that the communists have fallen, that is to say, making promises unless we are perfectly sure that we can fulfill them. Well, it certainly is the case at the present moment. We have embarked upon this rearmament program, which is going to put a further strain upon our economy, upon our production, which is, we have full employment, we're already working at full stretch, or we're said to be working at full stretch. And if we are to make a surplus available for the assistance of other countries, it seems to me that it can only be done by taking advantage of the methods which modern technology puts at our disposal. I believe that our production can be greatly increased by the full employment of machinery and of modern technology. I do not believe that that need involve a great sacrifice of leisure or involve a great deal of harder physical work. I believe the secret lies in taking advantage of the methods which modern technology places at our disposal, and also by giving up, abandoning those restrictive practices which we cannot deny are a feature of industry today, by giving those up.